Election reform bills have been passed to prevent the kind of problems that brought the Florida vote to the courts 4 years ago. But we still face plenty of potential nightmares. My guest, Dan Seligson, edited the report Election Preview 2004, What's Changed, What Hasn't, and Why. He's with the nonpartisan group ElectionLine.org, which provides up-to-the-minute news and analysis of election reform. It's run by the Election Reform Information Project. Florida passed an Election Reform Act in response to the problems of 2000. I asked Seligson if that means there'll be no hanging chads this time around.
There will be no hanging chad in Florida. That's not to say there won't be any problems in Florida. I think Florida appropriately was the first state in the country to acknowledge their mistakes in election administration and to have a comprehensive plan for reforming the way that they do elections. By early 2001, the state had already appropriated money and passed a fairly comprehensive bill that ensured, first, we wouldn't have these punch cards around anymore in the state. Second, the state would have a recount standard so that in the event of an extremely close race, less than 0.25% of the votes separating the candidates, it would be an automatic trigger for a recount. And third, it established something called provisional voting, which ensures that no voter, a legally registered voter, is turned away from the polls without being offered at least an opportunity to cast a vote.
Okay, so there will be no more punch card ballots in Florida. What kind of machines is Florida using?
Florida's using two types of voting systems. Most of the state, I believe about 54 or 55 of the state's 67 counties, are going to be using something called optical scan. These are familiar to any teenager taking the SATs. It looks like a piece of paper where you fill in a circle or complete an arrow. It's then fed into a machine that determines what your votes were. They have both a machine record, the scanning machine, and then they have a paper record if they need to count hand counted. If they need to count the ballots by hand, they have a record of those as well.
And the rest of the state?
The remaining 12 or 14 counties are using something called direct recording electronic machines, which are better known as touch screens, though that's not always accurate. These machines are basically, the name implies that the vote is recorded directly onto an electronic format. So the voter will touch a screen, depending on their choice. That's saved magnetically, sometimes on a paper journal. And then that vote count is then fed into another computer, which then can almost instantaneously give you your results.
So there's no paper trail on these machines, but is there a way of doing a recount?
Well, what the state decided actually in the last month was that if in the event of a manual recount, this what less than 0.25% of the vote, they would look at individual ballot screens. This has done little to assuage the concerns of those people who think there should be no paperless voting. Because essentially what you're having the machine do is, if it made a mistake, if it failed to register a vote, it's just going to replicate that mistake when it shows you the ballot image. But what they can do in Florida is they can look at each individual ballot image and determine if there is some sort of discrepancy between the total count of votes that the machine is giving out and the individual ballots that they're looking at.
Do you think Florida is any better off than it was 4 years ago in terms of voting accuracy?
I think the old concerns are gone. The concerns about how votes are counted, how recounts are triggered, those concerns are gone. I think what we have now are new concerns. Concerns over how you can do a recount with an electronic voting machine. What happens if votes are lost? In January of this year, there was a special election in Florida that was decided by about a dozen votes, and the machine produced 139 non-votes or undervotes. Keep in mind, there's only one race on the ballot, so we've got two people's names and two boxes that a touchscreen voter can touch. The final result was that there were 137 fewer votes than there were people who showed up at the polling place that day. So the question is, what happened to those votes? Did those voters intend to walk into the polls, sign in, go up to a machine, and walk away without voting? Or did the machine lose those particular votes? With using an electronic machine that has no paper backup, they don't know.
So how did Florida resolve the fact that there were so many undervotes?
The resolution was the vote count was the vote count. End of story. That's all they could do.
Well, looking ahead to the presidential election, what's going to happen? I mean, have they done anything to address this problem?
No, they haven't. And there were some suggestions that came out that maybe Florida should have an option on these electronic machines that say no preference. So instead of having to vote for one of the presidential candidates, if you really don't like any of them, rather than holding your nose and picking or walking away, you would just hit no preference.
A kind of none of the above type thing.
Exactly, exactly. And that way you can determine the voter intent. You can see that this voter, they didn't lose their vote. They didn't want to make a vote.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dan Seligson of the group electionline.org, a nonpartisan group that's just published a new report, which he edited, on the state of election reform. Let's get an overview of voting machines in the United States. I was surprised to find that more than 70% of voters in Ohio, which is a battleground state, are using punch card ballots. Are they likely to have hanging chads?
Well, Ohio, like many other states, looked at what happened in Florida and decided they didn't want quite the same problems in the event of some kind of a recount. What Ohio did was make a standard of what constitutes a vote and made it statewide. A vote on a punch card system in Ohio is two chads removed, at least two chads removed from the card, which is, if you remember from 2000, your sort of your chad primer. This is the hanging chad. That's a vote. A pregnant chad, not a vote. So the fact that they have these standards and that they have a way of counting votes across the state should help them avoid Florida-type problems.
What percentage of Americans are likely to have electronic or e-voting machines?
Well, 30% of registered voters live in jurisdictions that use electronic voting machines. I think we've seen early indications in Florida and elsewhere that some voters may decide that they want to vote a paper ballot instead, either an absentee ballot or in the case of some counties in California, just an optical scan ballot, that instead of having to cast a ballot on one of these paperless systems.
Now, you said that only machines in Nevada will have a paper trail. Most of the other e-machines don't have paper trails?
Right, none of them do. Well, there's a difference. A paper trail can also include, and the manufacturer of the machines will say this, a paper trail can be a journal, sort of a combination of all of the votes of the day without showing each individual vote in detail. What Nevada has is called a voter-verified paper audit trail, where you can actually see every single vote in each race. And the voter will take a look at that sort of behind a piece of plexiglass, and before they decide to cast a ballot, they're going to okay what they see on the paper as well as what they see on the screen.
Why do you think that all the states except for Nevada that are using e-voting machines chose to have machines that don't have a paper trail?
Well, keep in mind, not every state is using electronic voting machines. Some states are going to be using primarily optical scan. In New York State and Connecticut, they're going to be using entirely lever machines. So these machines are not nationwide, although there's electronic voting fairly widespread in most of the country. Some states made the decision that they want to do a Nevada-type system to have these voter-verified paper audit trails, but they didn't think they'd be able to get everything done in time for the election. California has an administrative rule that by 2006, they're going to have these voter-verified paper audit trails with their electronic voting machines. Ohio's going to do the same thing.
So do you think that's the direction the country's headed in?
You know, I think it really depends on how things go on Tuesday. If these voter-verified paper audit trails, if they work well in Nevada, if electronic voting seems to work smoothly in the rest of the country where there aren't voter-verified paper audit trails, if we have a breakdown of the paper trails or a breakdown of electronic machines, we could see some significant movement from states in coming years about how they're going to upgrade their voting technology, whether they're going to have these paper trails or not.
One of the companies that manufactures electronic voting machines is Diebold, and this has been a company surrounded by controversy because in part of a 2003 fundraising letter by its CEO, Walden O'Dell, who was inviting guests to a Republican fundraiser, and in this letter he pledged, quote, to deliver Ohio's electoral votes to the president, unquote. Now, do other voting machine manufacturers also make big political contributions in the way that Diebold does?
Well, we did a study on this earlier this year. Diebold, it's, I think, fairly or unfairly, because they're a public company, we can see everything that they do. It's very transparent. The other major voting machine companies are not public. It's much harder to track their contributions. However, the other voting machine companies don't do anything but elections for the most part, and Diebold, as most of us know, if we use ATMs, make just about every bank machine in the country. So Diebold has much more diversified products and has some needs to, like other banking companies, influence in that area. not just voting machines. So Diebold is very transparent. We can see what they do. The other companies aren't. We don't. You know, we had to study. We had to go through a number of different documents just to determine who the members of the board on these other voting machine companies were, because that information wasn't public and they didn't want to give it out. So it's much easier to tell what Diebold is up to. But these companies have all had fairly minor role in giving money to candidates. I think the most significant contributions came in 2002. There was a bond measure in California that ended up passing that had significant amount of money from the state to purchase new voting technology. And Sequoia and a couple other voting machine manufacturers gave money to that effort. That clearly is in their best interest to have this bond measure pass.
A lot of people are saying that Ohio is going to be the next Florida because Ohio is a battleground state, because it looks like the vote will be very close, because they're using punch card ballots, and because there's already been a lot of argument over newly registered voters. What do you make of that?
Well, I would even add to that list, and that's a pretty good list that could lead to another Florida. I've heard projections today that there could be as many as 200,000 provisional ballots in a state where each candidate seems to be getting about 48%. In opinion polls, I don't think either candidate's going to win by more than 250,000 votes. So we're looking at potentially each provisional ballot being under the microscope by each party to see whether it's going to count or not. There is an excellent likelihood of Ohio being another Florida. Frankly, there's a good likelihood of Florida being another Florida, if you don't mind the phrase. I think there's potential for problem in every state that both parties desperately need to win, and the election is going to be extremely close.
Why don't you explain what a provisional ballot is?
Sure. A provisional ballot was a safeguard put in place specifically to deal with what happened in Florida in 2000, where thousands upon thousands of voters, primarily African-American voters, were disqualified because they were somehow wrongly removed from the state's voter registration rolls and the county voter registration rolls. What provisional voting does is, if you are a voter who believes you're registered, but you show up at a polling place and your name is not on the registration rolls, you're given this provisional ballot to vote rather than being sent away. The ballot is then segregated from the main ballots, and your eligibility is determined after you leave the polling place. The second part of this is the voter needs to be informed of whether their vote was counted, and if not, why not? That's usually accomplished through a toll-free number or a website. In some states, we have both.
Well, that sounds like a very time-consuming process, doesn't it?
It could take as long as half an hour to 45 minutes per ballot. This is some estimates that we've got from Los Angeles County, who's used them for a number of years. So yes, it could be extremely time-consuming. It's also important to remember that while provisional ballots are new to a state like Florida, they're not new to Ohio. They've used them before. What is new is this notification system where voters will be able to find out whether their ballot was counted. So imagine, if you will, every punch card ballot that was held up to a light in Broward or Palm Beach County now has a name attached to it. These voters will know if their ballot wasn't counted. And believe me, they'll raise a stink if their ballot wasn't counted and they believe it should have been. So we have this added wrinkle in Ohio, and frankly in every state using provisional ballots, that it's no longer anonymous. Let's say a Bush voter lives in a county that's mostly Democratic, and their provisional ballot was rejected. They're going to claim it was party politics. Same with Democrats living in a Republican area. They're going to claim that their ballot was rejected for no other reason than they didn't vote for the person that, you know, they were expected to or wanted to vote for.
And is there like an appeal process to this?
For provisional ballots, my understanding is there is no appeal process. Each ballot's eligibility is determined. The appeal process would unfortunately be the court system.
Now, what are some of the reasons somebody would have a provisional ballot?
Well, one of the reasons why they're expecting so many provisional ballots in Ohio is that there's so many new voters in Ohio. The reason why a voter would need a provisional ballot, let's say they filled out an application for registration a month ago, but somehow through some unexpected loss in the mail, and it never gets to their house. They're not sure exactly where they're supposed to vote. They show up at the wrong place and their name isn't on the list. Let's say someone who's homeless registered, they would never get anything sent to them because they have no fixed address. Let's say that the DMV didn't properly process the application and get it to the voter registrar, so the person isn't on the list. So there's all kinds of reasons why there will be provisional ballots. I think any time you have a major bureaucratic burden just before an election, and this would be piles and piles of new registrations, the likelihood of provisional ballots is going to increase sharply.
Both sides, the Democrats and the Republicans, have already dispatched thousands of lawyers around the country, basically waiting for vote challenges. With so many lawyers from each side, do you think it's inevitable that we're going to be facing lots of lawsuits on Election Day?
I think so. You know, you have the terrifying image of armies of lawyers marching down to Florida. You know, you have to wonder, with this many people looking for trouble, what are the chances they're going to find it? I think the chances are excellent. They're going to find trouble. I think both parties don't want to be caught unprepared if we have a similar situation to 2000. They want to be on the ground and ready to go the minute the polls close. Sometimes they want to be on the ground and ready to go while the polls are still open.
You're not a pollster, so I really shouldn't be asking this to you. But
try me. I read them every day.
Okay, yeah. So what do you think the odds are that we're actually going to know who the president is on election night?
Well, I think we have an excellent chance of going to bed on November 2nd not knowing who the president is, for a couple of reasons. First, it's going to be extremely close, and I think states are going to be more careful than ever to release projected vote totals. I think they're going to want to wait until they get, you know, pretty good information before they release anything. I think the group that's going to give the projections to the media is going to be more careful than they ever have been before. It's their first time doing it. The conglomerate that did it in 2000 no longer exists. So I think that the networks aren't going to be racing to see who's going to declare the winner first. I think they're going to be nervously, you know, looking back and forth on their monitors to see who's going to dare and declare it first. I think the number of provisional ballots we could have in some states could exceed the margin of victory, in some cases by a significant margin, and I don't think anyone is going to want to take a chance and guess how that's going to turn out. So there's an excellent chance we won't know on November 2nd, you know, whether it takes 36 days or whether it takes an extra two. That's really up in the air right now. I would lean more on the side it could take an extra day or two.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us.
Sure.
Dan Seligson edited the report Election Preview 2004, which you can find on electionline.org. The website is run by the Election Reform Information Project.